The grade cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a grade cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the grade cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks, champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Hello and welcome to the Grade Cricketer Podcast on the Diamantina Podcast Network. Another massive show. Couple of test captains, three test captains on the spin. How do you top that? Well, you can't. Next best thing, CEO of Cricket Australia, Big Kevin Roberts, is joining the Grade Cricketer Podcast for the first time. That's the second CEO we've had, lads. That's pretty good going. Mm-hmm. What else is going on? Well, South Africa beat us in an ODI series. And, of course, the Australian, they're two from two of the Women's World Cup. And then, of course, Sri Lanka and England are currently engaged in a test match series. Adelaide, we're going to be in you. We're going to be inside you. When, Pez? Thursday, December 6th in the Rhino Room with a very special guest. Who's that special guest? Some would say fourth host of the show, Ed Cowan, will be joining us live on stage. Perth, we're going to be in you as well. Well, I keep saying in you out loud. It feels uncomfortable, but I'm doing it in front of two fully grown men who are fathers. That's going to be Friday, 14th of December. We're going to be at the Wacker. Tickets are available to all of our live shows. Of course, Sydney and Melbourne, we're coming to you after that. Go to our Facebook page. There's an events tab there, and you can buy tickets that way. We want to see you there, as many people as possible, to get around us. My name is Ian Higgins, and I'm joined by Sam Perry and Dave Edwards. Lads, welcome to yet another wonderful show.
I love how we call it a wonderful show before it even is.
Let's just
see how it goes.
Let's see how this one goes, yeah.
Another new audio set up for us here, lads. I'm currently staring at my son's crib or cot because we're down here in Melbourne because we're going to be doing the Kevin Roberts interview in person. We're actually setting foot into the Cricket Australia Jollymont offices. Does that mean we've sold out? Well, selling out normally requires money. That hasn't come yet. No. If you have any, come to us, unless you're a gambling organisation.
Fantasy's all right.
Yeah.
Some would say we've sold out. Is that the reason? No, this isn't the reason we've sold out. We've sold out in many other ways. As I say, we are making significant financial loss per episode. But please enjoy the free content. Please enjoy the free content.
But anyway, we haven't done it yet. It's as we speak now, it's 2 p.m. on Tuesday afternoon. We're due at the Cricket Australia offices at 4 p.m. walking through into Jollymont, into the kind of, you know, some would call it the Death Star. Would we call it that before we go into the offices? Well, it looks
behind
like
the backs we would.
Yeah, it looks like we would.
When we get there, we'll shake them and look in the eye and say thank you for having us, Mr. Cricket Australia.
It's just like a post-match handshake. You don't mean it at all.
I can't wait to look into his deep blue eyes. I assume they're blue eyes, and just eyeball Kevin Roberts and ask him the hard questions.
But I guess that interview is going to be firstly in person, so will we be scared? Most probably. Mm-hmm. Hopefully that comes through and you get some entertainment out of that, out of the actual physical shaking that you will hear through the microphones. But we thought that because we'll be tackling some administrative issues there, we'd talk a little bit about the cricket here. Does anyone remember what happened in the one-day matches that finished 48 hours ago? I don't. South Africa won, and we struggle. That's about it, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's funny because usually, we always say and have done for a number of years that if it's away from home, out of sight, out of mind. And this felt really, even though it was literally on our home soil, it didn't count. Because it's behind a paywall, so and it's one day cricket, so no one really cares about one
out of
day
sight,
cricket.
Out of mind. 68 a month,
unless that's the slogan.
This is in 4K,
yeah, 4K though.
It's cricket as you've never seen it before. So I mean, unless we're winning World Cups, then no, one day cricket doesn't count. I mean, we probably won't win the next one in England. England are probably going to win it, or maybe India, one of those two countries. Not Australia, who are third favourite of that competition. I'm not sure why, because South Africa are really bloody good.
Yeah, do you think that when the World Cup starts, all of Australia will presume that we will go deep and win?
Well, I think, it's naturally ingrained in all of us to expect at least semi-final appearances in all international sports we play, including soccer. we just have the highest expectations on the world stage, don't we? Unwarranted, really, but we have them.
Good basketball team at the moment.
Yeah, that's a good point.
We should go deep at FIBA. Naismith Trophy or whatever it's called.
But to answer your question, Pez, no, I don't remember what happened in the ODI cricket.
Well, we know what happened. We didn't win, did we?
Yeah.
We got pumped. Sean Marsh hit 100. That was good. Marcus Stoinis muscled a few to the boundary and over. So there were some positive things, but we did get pumped a little bit in the end.
Yeah. I like, there's a batting problem in Australian cricket. Like, I think we're pretty happy with how the bowlers go. I know we went for sort of 300 plus in the third game. Those three quicks will come into like they'll come into form for the test matches.
But line was it or frightening well. To see our quickest bowler, most scary bowlers get dismantled convincingly? Just, you know, hit for, I don't know what they hit off the last 10 overs, but it was six after six, and I was a little bit scared.
Do we expect these days, though, like one-day bowlers regardless, unless they're crafty spinners who humiliate people by spinning the ball in ways that they the batsmen don't expect? Like, can quick bowlers even intimidate in one-day cricket anymore? I know South Africa's bowlers intimidate our batsmen. That's because we've got batting problems. But, like, otherwise, a quick bowler's meant to be ferocious in one-day cricket. I recall, like, Starks opening over in the World Cup final. Apart from that, like, it's tough to recall an intimidating fast bowling spell. Wahab to Shane Watson.
Great shot.
Anything else?
Yeah.
I think in Australia, you have to intimidate. That's literally how we've won all this cricket. That's we've built this mantra for 30 years. That's why this podcast exists.
But there's something like really sad about watching the feared fast bowler just struggle and not know what to do. Like, put it everywhere on the pitch and just keep getting hit for sixes. It's almost existential.
I blame scheduling.
Yes.
Right, yeah,
you don't have to back that up, but I just want to say that out loud.
We'll raise that with Kev.
I don't know what counts at the moment, because it's like it's
well, nothing.
It's, that's true.
When it suits.
Yeah. But it's just like an ODI series, this three-match series, incongruously after a Pakistan series that was in the middle of a season.
It was incongruous, wasn't
yes.
it?
Yes. And I don't know.
Why South Africa now? Why now?
Why now? I don't. And it's just like before the test series, I'm used to everything being on Channel 9 and there being a test series first. Yeah. And then we play ODI cricket in a tri-series format and Australia A are playing.
Yeah.
So just getting back to the cricket.
Oh, yeah.
Australia's got a batting problem.
And you've said that six times.
But they
keep saying it.
Do you notice? I mean, do you guys have Fox? Are you even watching the cricket yourselves?
I'm watching it.
Yeah. But I don't have the account, but I'm using my father's account to get five logins, and I'm using one, and my brother's using one. I think a couple other people are using them.
Neighbors.
Does anyone want one?
Reach out.
Every time you watch the Australian guys bat, they're just. It's either four or nothing, really. It's just a lot of defending or trying to hit to the boundary and not much else. I just noticed at the end of the series, somebody made the point, a journal made the point, and it was factually correct that, like, Australia increased their totals as the series went on, which, like, and it finished with 280. And I'm like, if that's not the definition of regression, like, literally, we're like, and we ended up with 280.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to be back in 1994. Yeah. Feeling good, don't get me wrong, but, like, not in this context.
We actually lost that third game, we being the three of us lost that game, in the last five overs of our bowling innings when South Africa scored about 75 runs. They scored 150 in the last 15. They were in all sorts of trouble. Then Faf du Plessis, a.k.a. Dolce & Gabbana, allegedly what he's calling his fists, and Big Miller just piled on some runs. But, like, the bowling was just – I mean, the batting was okay. Sean Marsh batted well. Maxwell came in at the end there, you know, Stoinis. Ironically, I think the bowlers actually lost us that game because 320 was just far too many, in my opinion.
What's the next thing that we do? Is it a one?
Now, a whole host of T20s. We play T20s against South Africa, and then we play T20s against India, and then we play test matches against India.
In the meantime, though, the Big Bash starts in about 2 weeks, and then there's test matches as well. I'm so confused about what cricket is happening and when and on what channels.
Yeah.
Is that just me?
One day is to T20s to test as well. It doesn't sound linear to me. It should
be
either test to one day is to T20s or the opposite way.
Ascending order of length of
ascending
game.
Or descending order. Yeah. I'll take that, but not all over the shop like this.
I'm really convinced that India are going to beat us in Australia in this test series. I just think, like, I mean, last week on the show, we asked Dan Brody if the changes at board level were affecting the players' performance, and he said, nah, I think you're wrong, Dan Brody.
Coming back in a week
first
later.
First time ever.
Yeah, exactly. I think Australia are going to really struggle. Like, India's bowling is actually really strong, and there's all this talk about Kohli, who is amazing, and he is going to score 600 runs in this three-test series or four-test series. Like, that's just a fact.
Yes.
Yep. But their bowling is strong, and the rest of their batting is actually quite good as well. I just think Australia are so fucking shit at batting. who is actually going to score 100 except for Khawaja? Like, who is that person? Who's Sean Marsh?
Yeah.
He will play.
Aaron Finch,
is he going to?
He
hasn't got one before.
He could hit 100, though, couldn't he? He's hit hundreds.
Well, he's a batsman, and he'll be
I've watched him hit hundreds. Not at test level, but I know that he can hit 100. Can anyone else hit 100?
I don't. I just think, well, Kohli will score 100 in Adelaide because that is probably the flattest wicket in Australia. And now we're not playing the pink ball there. We're not playing the pink ball there match there anymore. So that's just going to be an absolute road. He scored 100 there before. His second most favourite. Oh, no, his most favourite innings. Didn't he say that? His most reviewed innings. He scored 150 in a fourth innings in Adelaide.
Yeah. I believe they lost that game.
That's
too,
the one where Lyon got a bunch of wickets, isn't it? Watching that when I was in Singapore.
Yeah. Lyon bowled us to victory the first time of his career, and that was sort of a turning point in his.
Do you think
this is a really meandering episode, isn't it? Yeah.
Do you think that there's any merit in the idea that because we normally just triumph over India on home soil with our tried and true alpha regression, that the ability, you know, our inability to score runs might just make it closer, and therefore it might make the matches closer? Or do you think that we're so far gone now that it's going to be crisis, dire straits?
Can India smell blood? Are they the kind of country that smells blood?
I think they smell it. Yes, yeah. They sniff it in the water.
Can we get rid of the blood before they come, so they can't?
Well, how would you do that? I mean, the only way you could feasibly get rid of that blood smell would be to recall the two guys that played grade cricket on the weekend. Now, we're not doing a campaign to bring back Smith and Warner like News Corp are. Mm-hmm. You can read them if you would like to witness that campaign. That comes on both sides, actually. It comes from that huge hit piece on Steve Smith, which I believe was part of the campaign to rouse people in his corner, and then another one from Buzz Rothfield afterwards saying, no, he's actually a really good bloke. Same. Yep. Yeah, you got to put him in jail and break him out.
Yep.
Good stuff. We're not part of that.
We're not doing that campaign. We should do a campaign at some point.
What sort of, yeah. Well, the campaign I want to do, and we'll raise this with Kevin today, is to change Premier Cricket, obviously, back to great cricket as Steve Smith and Dave Warner did. Will they get sanctioned for that? I'm not sure.
I was just thinking about who's, like Dave said, can we get rid of the blood before the India series? And, like, there's this whole thing, of course, that, like, Australia hate the Marsh brothers for some reason. Well, because they failed us overseas. But they are by far, like, within the best six batsmen in Australia,
exactly.
Like, comfortably. So, like there is no, this person doesn't exist that everyone thinks that, like, as we're hiding, who's got like 15,000 first class runs. That person does not exist in Australian cricket. Sean Marsh is easily one of the best batsmen in Australia.
Yeah.
Mitch Marsh, didn't he play under 150 last week?
But we don't want him to. We don't want him to play because he doesn't get runs overseas.
Someone else.
Novelty. Yeah. But, like, Australia is flat, fast, bouncy wickets, which means that so many of the balls just come outside off stump. If they're a bit full, who would you want for your life slapping a ball through cover point than Mitch Marsh and Sean Marsh? My life's on the line. Ooh. The ball's fallen outside off stump in Australia. I'm sorry, I'm Marsh Brothers. Okay?
But what about, Stoinis? Wouldn't it feel good if Stoinis saved your life?
I'd like to
if it's
look
a Hollywood
that.
Movie, wouldn't you feel more comfortable in the safe, warm, you know, chiseled arms of a Marcus Stoinis?
I think I'd prefer Hilton Cartwright. Just to throw a spanner in the works.
From a physical perspective.
He's a tender lover.
Purely just from a cover drive, put balls in the absolute spot and just stepping forward on the front dog and caressing it through the covers.
Yes.
I know it's a very specific criteria.
Yes.
But that's where I go.
So Bhuvneshwar comes into bowl in the first test at Adelaide.
Yep.
And it's in the afternoon in Australia about, let's say, 4:00.
Is Dave's life on the line?
There's lives on the line.
It's
on the line and you're in a little cage by the side. Well, because that's the hypothetical. And you're in a little cage by the side and it's kind of kill or be killed. It's a Barabbas, Jesus situation. And that's what it is.
Yeah.
Bhuvneshwar comes into bowl. The ball's outside off stump. It's full. There's a little gap at cover point. They're wanting to encourage the nick. That's a mistake. And the ball crunches off that bat. Who do you need playing that shot?
Probably Sean Marsh. Probably Sean Marsh. If you've said that my life's on the line, I'm scared of that context, and like, I can only hope that he'd be able to step on and cut through the covers.
Jeez, if he chopped on, you'd be annoyed and dead.
Well, is he on zero at the time, or is he on like 20 odd? Because that matters a lot.
That's a very
need more context.
Well, that's right, and that's the $1 million question. Yeah. Okay. I haven't thought of these far. I just got to the cage bit.
Okay, so anyway, Australia, prepare yourself, because the Marsh brothers are going to play for Australia in the first test. And personally, I think that's a good decision, because they are, in my opinion, two of the best batsmen in the country. Sri Lanka are playing in Sri Lanka at the moment against England, and England have just given us the greatest gift of all time, and that's why playing a new debutante. Dave, you watch this young man play. Can you tell us a little bit about him?
Can you just say his name for me? Ben Folks.
Yeah.
No, I just wanted to hear it again. I've been saying it all morning. I mean, when I was first drawn attention to, to Folksy, well, I'll call him, not to be confused with Steve Folks,
RIP.
Just a magnificent salad and face and teeth combination.
Yeah.
Just a head. I think someone tweeted it to us, said, great cricketer, look, you've got to have a look at this. Mm-hmm. There's this new player for England. Mm. And he just screenshotted a photo of his headshot for the England cricket team. And no one's ever looked good in a sporting team.
No, it's a mugshot.
It's a mugshot. He was exquisite. Like, no other word describes what I saw that day. And, you know, we're advocates of the salad rig tan combination, trifecta.
And it raises very important questions with an Ashes year ahead. If Folks manages to retain his position, he will likely go up against Tim Payne in the wicket-keeping, salad, face-moisturising stakes. It's a horse race.
This is how grim Australian cricket's getting. We're just seeing if we can pair off attractive men against each other.
That's right. I'd certainly watch that TV show. But Payne or Folks in the salad face stakes?
Who would you rather? Folks is gorgeous. I mean, Tim just looks nice, but Folks will like, I mean, he'll leave you on red for a while and then he'll reply back to you, but you'll reply back within the next minute. You know, like.
That's Tinder, is it?
I don't understand.
He's just, they're both boys next door, but Tim Payne is definitely next door.
He's saying Folks might have something else. He looks like James Dean.
This is what ODI cricket has been reduced to. This is what it is. Anyway, Folks scored 100, a wonderful 100 on debut. He was also in the touring party for England when they were out here when Australia beat them 17-0. He will play, though, and what a great acquisition. Also, Keating Jennings back in the runs. A gritty fourth innings 100.
What a private school name that is. That just screams private school, literally.
Yeah. Mm. It's English, isn't it? Left-handed opening batsman Keating Jennings.
Apparently a nice guy.
Oh, yeah?
Dad. Yeah. Yep. Sadly. And then also Moeen took four far. England are looking good, I got to say. We don't win in Sri Lanka by 212 runs in the first test.
After a whole bunch of
one-day wins as well. We don't do that anymore.
Not in the first test.
Again, I know I mention every show and it's starting to annoy myself, but, you know, self-destructive streak, all that sort of stuff. But, like, I was in London and I can see it. I can see the fear of next year. Next year is an England World Cup win on extremely flat wicket. So they had a chance to trial this with the Champions Trophy 2 years ago, which is like a World Cup warm up. Mm. And they blitzed everybody until they got stuck on a wet wicket. So all they've got to do is just have flat wickets in England next year. They will win that tournament and then they will come and beat Australia in the Ashes, because while Mitch Marsh can hit through cover point on Allan Border Field, when he plays that same shot against James Anderson with a Duke ball, he will nick off and the rest of us will as well. And it's a nightmare. It's a nightmare approaching. Please fix it, Kevin Roberts.
Also, it'll be Anderson's last series, won't it? And possibly Broad as well.
It's going to be an absolute swan song.
They're not peaking too early, are they? I mean, that's the only, I'm just trying to look for silver linings everywhere in my life, but here specifically now, is that something we can take away from it as Australia? Like, they're looking good now, World Cup in the Ashes is still a little while away.
Edo's like what you're saying there. It's just, in my mind, it's England. Like, they'll find a way to fuck this up.
Yeah.
You know, and I love English people. I love the country. It's magnificent. The best cricket in the world is played in England. Bat versus ball. Duke's ball swinging around corners. You know, batsman's hundreds actually meaning something as opposed to runs at the MCG in the fourth innings. I just think that, like, but it's England, you know? Like, what are they, how are they, like...
It's got to change, though, at some point, though. Like, again, being there for the World Cup last year, the Football World Cup, that is.
Yeah.
They transcended a bit there. They won a penalty shootout. Mm. They went deeper than they should have. The players were kind of... convivial, gregarious people embracing the fun of a World Cup. They weren't burdened by expectations. It was a nice summer there. Things are changing in England. Yeah, scared.
Yeah, but Brexit's
coming.
Yeah. But we're talking about it now that there is expectation that this is going to be is going to be, you know, their 1966 all over again. This is going to be their World Cup victory. Imagine a World Cup into an Ashes triumph in England. Like, it's just going to be. Imagine if they beat.
Country's
Australia
just
going to
blow up. It's just going to actually.
I was going to say, if you're going to fly us over, but now I think, MI6 will not allow us over.
No one allows us over. Australia in the Women's World Cup, our friend of the show, Adam Collins, is covering that over there. Australia off to a flying start, rollicking start, 2 from 2. Alyssa Healy just hit the second fastest 50 of all time with in 21 seeds. Nice to see that we're winning something.
Yeah, so it's the Women's T20 World Cup. Australia just played Ireland, and one note from that was in chasing 94, Australia was chasing 94, I believe, early 90s, somewhere in the early 90s, they actually got a head start. They got to start at none for five because Ireland were penalised 5 runs for running down the wicket, which I thought was novel. The 5-run penalty. I know, like, whenever I played in club cricket, juniors all the way through, any time someone threw the ball in from around the third man to fine leg area, I was just willing it to hit the helmet. It never really did.
I
just wanted to see it just absolutely crash into a helmet and just go, yeah, 5 runs. It never did. Do you guys have any of that?
Yeah, I've seen a 5. I was responsible for a 5 once. I just kind of dropped it and it kind of hit it and the umpire held me to it. 5 in the scorecard.
What do you mean you dropped it and it hit it? Like you dropped the ball.
Yeah, what were you doing?
I was at a slip.
And you dropped it onto a helmet?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like just a slip.
Where was the helmet? Like behind the keeper?
Behind the keeper, I was at first slip.
I see you parried it onto the helmet.
Yeah.
Do you still think about it?
I haven't thought about it, actually, since it happened.
Yes.
Well,
until right now, and then I remembered it.
Enjoy that sleepless night for the next 3 weeks. Kevin Roberts is on the show.
Now, boys, just as Brendan Julian said, before we go on with today's show, I'd like to propose a toast.
Let's charge our glasses.
To today's sponsor, Vinamofo. Wine can be confusing. We all know that.
You've always said that.
It's hard to pronounce. It can be pricey. And it's heavy to carry a case home from the store.
Nothing worse.
But not with Vinamofo, boys. They only have wines they drink and love. So you know you'll get the good stuff.
You know it's going to be good, Pez.
It's important to know you'll get the good stuff.
Good wine, just one click away. And if that's not enough, just for listening to The Grade Cricketer, you can get $25 off your first order.
What, just for listening? Yeah. They're having a laugh.
Let me tell you how. Just go to vinamofo.com and enter the promo code podcast at the checkout. Get the best value wines curated to your taste, delivered. Support the show and get $25 off. That's vinamofo.com and the offer code podcast. Let's get on with the show. Well, boys, can you hear the little echo around the room? If these walls could talk, well, we'll ask actually what has been said within these walls. But let me just paint the picture a little bit. It's a big boardroom. There's a few pictures lying around that look fairly familiar. There's a couple of big widescreen TVs. There's a few other people sitting in the room as well. We don't normally do interviews face-to-face, but this particular person has agreed to that. Rightly or wrongly, I guess we'll find out. I'm going to do this intro a little bit differently to the way I normally do it because it's a stats thing. You know, we all know that cricketers are just numbers. But words are important here as well. I just want to know if you recognise these words. To the interviewee, I was appointed managing director of Adidas Australia at age 30 and the business became the most improved Adidas subsidiary globally. Employee engagement, customer satisfaction and brand equity were transformed and 3 executives earned international promotions. Our market share doubled, operating margins improved by 20 percentage points and we established a profitable retail network.
Well, it sounds to me, Sam, like you probably want the human side behind that story, doesn't it?
I'll come back to you in a second, Kevin. I won't go on with your LinkedIn profile. Let me go on with your cricket stats. 23 matches, 1,088 runs at first-class level, high score of 119, an average of 27.89, 15 catches, 850s, 100, probably more than the large majority of people who listen to this show. He's a head honcho. He has crystal blue eyes and an impressive chest for a CEO. We're here in person in the boardroom. This is no doubt the toughest interview you'll ever have in his life. Welcome to The Grade Cricketer, newly minted Cricket Australia CEO, Kevin Roberts.
Thanks, Sam. I think what that player profile should have said is that I'm a B-grade Jonty Rhodes, or at least I was.
on your profile, though, I actually had a look at your ESPN Crick Info page, and it actually hasn't been updated since December 1996, which I found a bit strange given recent developments. One of the other things it said is you need to add the ability to go on and make big hundreds, and it lists your profession as a sales representative for ASICS. What's it like to be alphaed by a website?
How do I answer that one, Dave? I don't know. Please explain.
Mm. If you're not sure how to answer it, just say who hurt you. So that's normally what's behind most of these questions. Kevin, we...
Can I say at least they didn't champ me?
Right.
We got the sound bite. He's got the lines. He's got the lines. Okay, let's go. Kevin, we spoke with Gilly last week. We call him Gilly. Mm. Can we call you Kev as well?
Go for it, yeah, Sam. Okay. I've been called a whole lot worse.
Okay. We heard from him about Killara Oval last week and how a lot of his, you know, great memories from cricket still come from grade cricket. You sort of played in the same era. You might have even played with Gilly. Can you tell us a little bit about your background with grade cricket, what it means to you?
Absolutely. It means everything to me. It was, it played such a significant role in my formation, my growth as a person, and really set me up for other aspects of life. And Richie Beno once said famously that cricket's a metaphor for life, and to some degree I think grade cricket is a metaphor for life, and we have such experiences that form us or influenced our formation that it played a huge part in my life. Absolutely.
You played in a very competitive era of grade cricket. I mean, what are some of your memories from a playing perspective? And we will get to the administrative element of that as well. But, what are some of your favourite memories of playing grade cricket in that era?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't uncommon to play against Australian players back then, Sam, was it? So amazing experiences as a 17-year-old, 18-year-old kid playing against your test heroes. And a badge of honour to be sledged by them or whatever the case may be. So, yeah, great experiences, whether it be... I ended up at Bankstown, but I played for Gordon from age 6 to 20. Mm. And by the way, we've got 4 ex-Gordon players here in the boardroom of Cricket Australia. Mm. About time, hey? In all seriousness, played against Bankstown with the War Twins in the team, Wayne Holdsworth, Steve Small, and the list goes on. When I was 18, they all turned up at Bert Oldfield Oval at Killara. Mm. And, in the warm-up, had to do the traditional dodging of the dog turds around the edge of the ground as they were doing their warm-up lap. So it was a far cry from the SCG. But experiences like that really stick in your mind. And, facing Jeff Lawson on the same ground, who ended up as one of my state coaches for New South Wales, but Henry pushing off the sight screen in the dark there and trying to run for cover as a 17, 18-year-old wearing a cap rather than a helmet facing him. So amazing experiences that really toughened you up as well as a young kid, real tests of character. And not suggesting I passed them all, but they were great in terms of how they helped you learn and grow.
Mm.
It's interesting just to hear some famous names there, Kevin, about some of the guys you play with. Just remind me of some of the names that I play with as well. Famously, Uncle Fester, who had a gambling addiction, but a great leg spinner and a terrific wrong-un as well. So, we all shared some great experiences at Gordon. But I want to know what you think about where grade cricket is now, like its place in Australian cricket, because there's, Steve Waugh recently has made a lot of big comments about, we should be going, funding back into grade cricket, and we should be, using more resources to toughen up our international cricketers. But what do you think the place for grade cricket is now?
Yeah, look, I'm really passionate about grade cricket and the role that it plays in Australia and the premier cricket community, if you like. So I'd like to see us put more priority on premier cricket going forward. There's no question that we need our state programs, we need our national programs, but I think we've got to be really careful not to compromise those local competitions and programs. Competitions like in Sydney, the Green Shield, I think it's the Lord's Taverners in Brisbane, the similar competition, Poitevin Grey Shield in Sydney under-21s. Those competitions have been and are fantastic, and I think there's really good opportunities to place more emphasis on those as part of what we now call our high-performance pathway. And I think it's also really imperative that we provide more flexible ways for guys and girls to play premier cricket. So we know life's a whole lot faster than when the 4 of us were running around for Gordon. And we know that it's not necessarily going to work for everyone to play from, 11 till 6 and the other commitments of travel and what have you that come either side of that, every Saturday and every other Sunday. So I think we've got to be really looking to more flexible ways of staying in the game. And part of that answer would be 2020 cricket in the premier cricket landscape. So it'd be great if that's a mechanism to get more guys in particular playing premier cricket until they're 30 and beyond. Because as we know, over the last couple of decades, the average age of Premier cricketers has come down. Mm. Now, it's pretty much stabilised in recent years, but part of the learnings that we all experienced in Premier Cricket were from being young and playing with older teammates and being mentored, and the experiences not just on the field but in the dressing room. Now, we're not going to recreate that in a romantic way because we're now in 2018, you know, not in, 1989 when I first played first grade. But the reality is we can do a bigger and better job in terms of Premier Cricket, and I'd like to see us put more focus on it going forward.
So if I understand you correctly there, I think it's great that you call out that there are too few older people in Premier Cricket at the moment. I mean, I was just saying to the guys before I came in, when my final season at St Kilda in 2011, I was 25 and was the second oldest player at the club. There's an issue probably in Australian cricket at the moment, I think, at the higher level, where I think the domestic guys probably aren't exposed to enough older guys as well. If I understand you right, are you saying that CA are going to take measures to try and keep people within Premier Cricket, strengthen Premier Cricket through 2020 cricket and making it shorter? Is that the only initiative?
I don't think it's the only potential one, Sam. It's one that's in the pipeline now. There's a national Premier T20 competition that's been launched, and there's great enthusiasm around that, as you'd appreciate, from most parts of the country, because it gives players an opportunity to be part of something bigger. And you might end up with a team from Perth playing against a team from Melbourne, you know, in the national final. So that'd be fantastic. So that's certainly one mechanism we've got, or one initiative that's in place. As to the role that Cricket Australia can play and would play more broadly than that, it's really about engaging with states and territories. That's, after all, where Premier Cricket is played, and working with them to look at the priority being placed on Premier Cricket, where it sits within the high-performance landscape. Are we respecting it enough? Are we putting enough energy and focus into it and supporting clubs as best we can?
How much is the... you just said high-performance landscape, and we've heard the word pathways there before. I mean, how much is the high-performance landscape or pathways and that kind of idea, and correct me if I'm wrong, but that idea of essentially identifying players young and kind of putting them into a lane while the rest of the players kind of battle it out in grade cricket, you know, how much do you think that impacts the team at the national level? Do you think that there needs to be some older people or some greater strength given back into Premier Cricket?
I'd like to see that, Sam, absolutely. And those programs, you know, the national programs are important, but I think it's important they supplement the local programs rather than detracting from them. So I don't want to be hearing in a few years' time that we're pulling players out of Green Shield or PGs or the equivalent competitions around the country to be part of other programs, because I don't think that's ultimately beneficial for cricket. The reality is that we do have Australian players and to a somewhat lesser degree state players and BBL, WBBL players coming out of their Premier cricket teams to play at the higher level. Now, that's fine, but we need to be careful with the jigsaw that is scheduling, and it's really complicated. Often there appears to be too many pieces in the box to be put together in the jigsaw and make it work. So I'm not pretending it's easy, but I am saying that I really want us to go back and assess the best way for these national programs to work in concert with the Premier Cricket competitions, rather than being perceived to work against them in some cases. Mm-hmm.
So, Kevin, you're effectively the club president of Australian cricket. How does that feel? I mean, you've only been in the job for a handful of hours, really. There's obviously been a lot of change recently. We might get to that in a moment. But how are you settling in? And, you know, a lot of our politicians talk about their 100-day plan. Have you got a 100-day plan? And if so, what is that?
Yeah, well, I guess if I'm the club president, Dave, there's probably bad news and good news there. The bad news is it probably means I'm working 100 hours a week. And the good news is I might get a free beer now and then if I am truly a club president. But look, we've got a few key priorities in terms of elevating and focusing more on some of the things that we've already been doing. The fundamental one is for us to deepen our relationships right across Australian cricket. And so that includes with state and territory associations, making sure that we're working in the most united fashion. And that doesn't mean, frankly, a Cricket Australia takeover of those organisations in inverted commas at all. It means we've got a role in terms of coordinating and bringing the states and territories together around national programs and making sure that the domestic piece and the international piece fit together well. Mm. And so that's a really key priority for us. Our relationships with players, our relationships with our commercial and broadcast partners, the ACA. So that underpins everything that we're going to do. And if there's only one thing that we do in the next 100 days and, in fact, the next couple of years, that would be it. The reality is there's more than one. And so alongside that, we've got to work on fantastic experiences for fans, be it at match or be it viewing matches from home. So I'd like to explore how we can create some major events on the event calendar. Right. So three or four existing, if you like, test matches or BBL finals, various other key events through the year, how can we elevate those more, and how can we bring a community cricket element into those where you might have some national competitions culminating with a final that might even be a curtain raiser. If it's not a curtain raiser, it could certainly be played in the same city as that major event. So bringing the highest level of the game and the entry level of the game together to celebrate that sense of community. And then there's, to that point, working with the states and territories to make a difference in communities through community cricket. We'll be working on programs to get our people at Cricket Australia spending a couple of days each per year working in cricket communities to better understand the experience for volunteers and players. And then when it comes to the professional levels of the game, I've got real confidence in Justin Langer as our new men's coach, Tim Payne as our test captain, Finchie as the captain of the white ball teams, and of course we've got a stellar operation, if you like, on the women's side of the game, led by Matthew Mott as coach and Meg as captain. And so I really want to work on that long-term vision for professional cricket too, and with part of that being building it from the bottom up. So that I quoted the other day, we want the under 16 rep team coach in a suburb of Hobart to feel like they're playing a role in developing the Tasmanian and Australian players of the next generation, so that they're part of this rather than feeling like they're working away locally and we've got these flash national programs that bypass them. We want to integrate them into that system.
I really like the idea of this national T20 competition, the 2020 competition, and I like before how you lied that a final would be between a Melbourne and a Perth team, when obviously we know that Sydney Test cricket is the strongest in the country, so it'd be two Sydney teams in the final, obviously, but take that as given. You talk about streamlining a lot, and something that grey cricketers especially really dislike, especially towards the end of when I was playing, just to make this about me now, is that like the under 23 competition, the Futures League, and the removal of sort of proper second 11 cricket was a huge aspect of so many guys after the age of 23, 24, 25 stopping from playing. Like, would you agree that the sort of advent of that competition was hugely detrimental to Australian cricket?
Yeah, I don't think it's been hugely detrimental, Ian, but I think it's a really interesting consideration for us going forward. And there's at least a couple of competing arguments there, if not more than a couple.
Sure.
But I've put forward the view that most things now are happening later in life, and most fortunately we tend to be dying later on average. You know, we've got longer life expectancies, people are settling down later, and maybe I'm only looking at us as washed-up grade cricketers. Maybe we settle down later than most people do, but in all seriousness, they're settling down into relationships later. I would say they're buying properties later, but that's probably due to property prices as much as anything
else.
Talk
about how do you buy property, yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, in all seriousness, and property's pretty expensive around Gordon these days, right? But anyway, back to your question. I think, you know, you look physiologically at a 40-year-old athlete today, and they're not far different to a 30-year-old athlete of 20 years ago, given the advancements in sports science. Now, we know that, to quote Steve Waugh, cricket is 95% mental and 5% physical. So the player still has to have the drive, still has to have that burning passion and the hunger to perform at the highest level, to compete at age 30, 35 or whatever. But the physiological reality is that we're in better nick at older ages than we used to be 20 or 30 years ago. And I think that's a really interesting reference point around where the right threshold is. Is it under 23s? Is it not? Should it be age limited or not? Now, we don't want teams populated wholly and solely by 35-year-olds running around, because how does that allow the 16-year-old to dream? You know, they can't then touch that dream. It's nearly 20 years away from them. But I think we've really got to have a look at a sensible balance to that. I don't have the answer right now, but it's something that we're looking to address.
Mm. Well, good to know. You'd consider it. I guess there's a lot of things for you to consider. I mean, there's so much. I'll come to later whether you think you've got clear air at the moment. But I mean, let's touch on the culture review. So much of the culture review would have been discussed in this very boardroom again if his walls could talk. But I want to ask you, Kevin. Especially in the context of it being your sort of first 100 days, you know, the two main words that came out of the culture review were a view of Cricket Australia as arrogant and controlling. Do you accept that from the findings of the review? And if so, what would you do to address it and change it?
Yeah, there's been, you know, a bunch of different responses to that, Sam, some more emotional than others, some more objective than others. And my view on that is that any experience that someone's had of Cricket Australia is real to them. So I'm not really interested in quoting whether that was an isolated matter or whether we disagree and it's not backed up by fact. Whatever a person's experience was of Cricket Australia, it was real to them. And we've got to respect that, and we've got to, you know, look at that humbly and look at ourselves in the mirror with humility. Then we've got to consider, well, how widespread was that type of experience? Because it is true that in some cases one person's experience might have differed quite a bit from the experiences of a lot of others. Doesn't mean that person's experience wasn't real. And part of what we've got to do, Sam, is really consider how widespread the various examples of this were, and that helps us prioritise how to deal with it. But there's absolutely no question that I'm looking for us to be a more respectful and more humble organisation in all of our relationships. It doesn't mean that we should bend over all the time, but it does absolutely mean that we need to take on board with real respect the views of everyone who we deal with. And it's not about trying to keep everyone happy, because the only certainty is if we try that, we'll fail. Mm. But it is about really respectfully taking their views on board, processing those and determining how we can deal with them.
There was a hugely public firing that happened at this office just a week or so ago in terms of Ben Amafia. Can you tell us why he was marched out of the building with security?
Yeah, so not marched out of the building with security, I've got to say, Ian, but like most buildings, the car park has security swipe points.
Right. And someone walked down with a security swipe and let him out? Is that
beautifully put. Yeah. That was about the extent of it. But look, in all seriousness, Ben achieved a lot at Cricket Australia, brought a lot to Cricket Australia, and it's true that we need to go in a somewhat different direction in future, but that doesn't take away from anything that Ben achieved here, or anybody else for that matter. I also spoke about Pat Howard in the same light, who brought a lot to Australian cricket teams over a number of years.
One of the things that Ben was, I guess, the architect of is the media rights deal that's in place now. I'm sure you're familiar with the early figures of the one-dayers, which are obviously behind a paywall. Do these early ratings worry you? I mean, does it worry you? I mean, you're in charge of the governing body, that two-thirds of the country don't have access to these early season matches, and what are your thoughts on all that?
Yeah, I can really understand you asking that question, Dave. I think it's a fair question. I'm not concerned at this early stage, and I don't mean to sound flippant, but I think in cricket and in sport more broadly, there is a danger that we fall into that. I think the experts call it the recency bias. You know, our last match was a loss, so everything's a disaster.
But we all grew up watching one day as during the summer. It was part of, you know, our childhood, our collective childhood, and a lot of the people out there who don't have Foxtel. I guess just to suddenly not be exposed to that, that's got to be hurtful for the game.
Yeah, I can understand that that's not ideal for everyone. At the same time, we've got more cricket than ever on free-to-air TV this season, and we had to accept and then accept a level of trade-offs. We know it's not perfect, but we were very, very keen to make sure that more women's international cricket was shown on free-to-air TV. It's really important that we did that. We've also got domestic competitions in the form of the BBL and the WBBL. So between all of that, there's more cricket on free-to-air TV than ever before. We're really excited about the launch of Foxtel's live streaming service, KO as well, which is launching very soon. And that'll be a much more cost-effective way of engaging in cricket and watching cricket through digital means, digital devices on Fox. So that's exciting too. I accept, Dave, that it's not ideal for everybody, but I think on balance we've got a really good solution overall, and that does include a dedicated cricket channel on Fox. So for all of those. Can I say cricket nuffies out there as a term of endearment?
Yes.
We've got a Fox cricket channel, which is a fantastic thing for those devotees of the game.
Real great cricketers don't have any money though, so they might not be able to afford that service.
No, but they've got mates, Dave, and
they can use their login.
So they can all gather at a mate's place and then argue about who pays the subscription.
Yeah. Roberts encourages sharing logins. No, I'm joking. We're doing our best sort of Parkinson or Denton impression here with all the serious questions. Yeah. We'll keep it going a little bit. I promise you it will get lighter, Kevin, but I'm keen for your thoughts here. You mentioned stakeholders before and that being probably the number one priority for you guys and deepening those relationships. Just in relation to the culture review, like, why did you feel like the organisation had to have a review like that to start taking stakeholder concerns seriously? Surely you guys would have been aware of the poor behaviour of certain individuals before the long staff review.
Yeah, so certainly we've got regular mechanisms in place to understand the sentiments of various groups of people that we deal with in various parts of the game, whether it be the community aspects of the game or whether it be the commercial aspects. So those mechanisms are in place. But I've got to say, I really respect the view that the board took to say, well, no, let's look at this more holistically, more independently, and it's not as if those regular mechanisms that are in place are all run by ourselves. They're not. There's independent feedback and what have you. But I think it was a real opportunity that the board took to say, okay, let's step right back from this and let's not be guided by our own perspectives, but let's take other perspectives on board really sincerely and then determine where we can improve. Now, that's tough, right? It's challenging reading some of the detail of the report, because frankly it didn't really ask people for everything that's great about the game or the way that CA plays a leadership role in the game. It was essentially saying, tell us what can improve. And I think that's probably an important reminder, not to sugarcoat any of the feedback, but just to remind ourselves that the purpose wasn't say, hey, give us a pat on the back for all the great stuff we've done. It was, tell us honestly about all of the areas where we can improve.
Was it a bit of a grey error, though, to kind of try and push the report through without the states having seen it at the AGM?
Oh, let's be honest, Dave, the sequencing didn't work, did it? There's lessons to be learned from that mistake. Everything was well intended, and I can understand that people are asking questions as to what motivated the sequencing of all of that. But I can honestly say that there was no ill intent on the part of the board or anybody else in cricket. But at the same time, I've got to front up to this and say, hey, it just didn't work, did it?
Nearly there, Kevin.
That's encouraging, Sam.
Yeah. Just wipe away those beads of sweat.
Yeah.
Serious CIA interrogation.
Am I on 49 or 99?
What am I on? Yeah.
So, Kevin, David Warner and Steve Smith, not banned for ball tampering. We know that. They were banned for bringing the game into disrepute. If through the Longstaff review and maybe through others as well, if we accept that Cricket Australia sowed at least some of that disrepute over a period of time, doesn't it follow that those bans be reconsidered?
Not necessarily. In the eyes of some, perhaps. In the eyes of others, no. And I'm not sure there's any right or wrong answer here, but what I can say is that in roughly equal measure, people seem to be saying maintain the sanctions, they weren't tough enough, or they should be more lenient, they should be adjusted back at this point in time. And I respect all those different views, and I know that whatever view the Cricket Australia Board takes going forward, there'll be a bunch of people who agree with it and a bunch of other people who don't agree with it. I know that we're all responsible for our own actions, and we're taking accountability for creating a better environment in future. But as the Longstaff report noted, Cricket Australia didn't perform that ball tampering, if you like. Unfortunately, it was the individual's concern. But in saying that, we're really focused on supporting them and their entries back into the game as well. And I know that, as I say, whatever position our board takes on that going forward. There'll be people who agree with that and don't agree with that, both of whom will have their valid reasons.
I think on behalf of the grey cricketer, sorry, it would be good if you could actually extend those bans for another 12 months because we've had unprecedented publicity and interest in the grey cricketer. Steve Smith and Dave Warner in grey cricket is what we need for more sponsorship opportunities for our podcast.
Kevin,
thanks for saving me from that one, Sam.
So the board does have something to consider in relation to their bans from what you've just said there. I know the ACA put a submission to Cricket Australia in relation to that. The board will consider or reconsider the ban. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think it's only right that that's given due consideration, and it's always good to reflect on these things. And so that will happen over the course of the next couple of weeks, the board reviewing the ACA submission. And at the same time, there's a lot of other, if you like, business as usual stuff that's going on between Cricket Australia and the ACA as well in terms of our relationship going forward. But back to your question, yes, the board will review that or reconsider the position and have a good think about that.
What are you going to do about News Corp's clear campaign to have them back?
I mean, pick up the phone to Rupert?
Just
go direct.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, okay, you don't answer that. Good. Let's move on to throwdowns, shall we? Are we good?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Well done there. This is completely self-indulgent, and all the jokes are wrapped up in the question. So, again, just answer who hurt you if you're not sure what to say. Kevin, given your renewed commitment to grassroots cricket that you've spoken about today, are you prepared to announce the reinstatement of grade cricket as the official name of that competition and consign its shinier cousin Premier Cricket to the dustbin where it belongs?
A shinier cousin in the dustbin. Yeah, I'm not sure how that would all work.
We've written two books.
So it's interesting. We know it as grade cricket. I think Melbourne previously knew it as district cricket, and there's a bunch of other names around the country. So I think the motivation behind that name change some years ago when that occurred was, ironically, to try and place more priority on what we out of Sydney knew as grade cricket by saying, hey, it's Premier Cricket, it's the level below professional cricket. And so I think that's a really healthy desire, but I guess you're taking the piss now with these questions and I'm answering seriously. So
it's incorrect to call it Premier Cricket. Yeah. Okay.
Kevin, I reached out to some of your former teammates during the week, and the first question is, where did you hide the body? No. Did your father build a synthetic cricket net in your backyard, and was a ball machine included? Then a second question came in and said, just to add to the question about the cricket net, did your father fill in the family swimming pool to build a synthetic cricket net in the backyard, and at that time, were there cricket nets located less than 50 metres from your front door?
Correct weight, Ian. So what happened there was we had the old Clark rubber above ground pool, as you did back in the day. And so I did a deal with Dad and said, if I rip the pool out with my own hands, I couldn't make one, but I could rip one out. if I rip that out, can I build a concrete strip and put some netting around it and earn an income by moving my own little coaching business from the nets up the road into the backyard? So
right.
So bought the ball machine. Bought a second-hand VHS video camera, so kids from the North Shore of Sydney would be brought in by their parents. We'd put the VHS tape in, and away we'd go. So that paid for the petrol in my 1976 Toyota Corona to drive down around to grade cricket matches on the weekend.
Very enterprising.
Most entrepreneurial grade cricketer I've ever heard of. Kevin, James Sutherland famously turned his TV off and went to bed before everything kicked off in Cape Town, which put him behind the eight ball in terms of crisis management. My question, can we rely on you to be awake at the helm when Australian cricket suffers its next existential nightmare on foreign soil in the early hours, or you're a lights out at 10 kind of guy?
I'm more like 10:30, Dave.
So we should be right in the ashes.
Absolutely.
Kevin, it's day one at the Adelaide Test. You're at a function with the BCCI CEO. He says, hello, champ. He's champed you. How do you react?
Well, that'd be disappointing, wouldn't it? I'd probably walk into the next room. But it wouldn't be any fun being champed by anyone from the BCCI, would it? But I'd probably seek your advice as to how I could respond. I'd go into the next room, give you a call, and ask for your advice as to where I go with that.
We can give you our rates for that.
Kevin, is expanding the Big Bash competition an opportunity to promote more of the traditional elements of the game to a new audience? And by traditional elements, I of course mean R&B music, art reach over, fireworks, hip-hop dancing and flat-brim hats.
Wow, there we go. Which element of the question do I take on? But, we might stick with the existing entertainment, hey?
Yeah, yeah.
Kevin, I know that Cricket Australia is trying to become more rootsy and relatable. So what's the deal with these mahogany desks?
Well, you can see they're not new. So we've had a renewed focus on saving costs here recently to the extent that one of the guys in the organisation dropped his phone the other day. And it's a $60 repair if a company has to come here and pick it up. Or you can save the $60 by walking up to the CBD and handing it over the counter and getting them to repair it. So what I can say is these desks are old. They're in reasonable condition, which you didn't care to share with your listeners, Dave. But anyway, I'll add that one in.
We'll edit this out, though.
And that Nathan Bauer, our guy upstairs, saved $60 on the repair of his phone the other day as well. So there's a few balls for community cricket.
Kevin, do you have the power to order a baggy green and can I have one?
You or I have got the power to order a baggy green, Ian. What we don't have the power to do is to have any embroidery on it. So it could be a baggy green, anything, for that matter.
No, IH, thanks very much. Cap number 457.
We're getting towards the end here, Kevin. Yeah. Thank you for your patience. I'm curious about the CA recruitment process in their search for the global CEO. Was it an arduous 3-day elimination process of interviews, PowerPoints and psychometric testing, or did it just come down to who could bench the most?
Yeah, it was a little bit more than benching, but I'll tell you what, it was rigorous and so it should be, to be fair. So lengthy process and learned a lot about myself and other aspects of the organisation in the process too.
Did you have the upper hand because you were just in the next office?
I'm not sure about that. It didn't feel that way, I can tell you that much, but I was certainly put under the pump.
Do you bench? No. Kevin, I dream often about being timed out in cricket. It usually manifests in not being able to find my pads or get them on, and then if I do get them on, I can't run very well, even if I get out there to the middle, so I'm not timed out anymore, I can't run very well. Other cricketers have expressed privately that they also have these dreams. Chris Rogers was one of them as well. And then some certain other cricketers have just said that's the strangest thing they've ever heard in their life. Just talking to the CEO of Cricket Australia, do you identify at all with being timed out in your dreams?
Absolutely. There's two nightmares that I had many times over. One was when I started playing for New South Wales, I'd deferred the last couple of subjects in my uni degree at Macquarie Uni in Sydney, and I'd have nightmares that I actually didn't finish that. But more importantly, the other nightmare that I had that was a lot more vivid was sitting on the loo at Waitara Oval, the home of Northern Districts, and being timed out. And I think I was probably most concerned about that because I had a couple of mates playing for Northern Districts, Ross Turner, Phil Gregson, and I knew that if I was at the 2-minute, 1-second mark that they would appeal. So I suspect that's probably why Waitara was the scene of the nightmare. It's a few years since I've had it, but I can honestly tell you that I must have had that nightmare a good 10 times, along with that other nightmare of never finishing uni.
Specifically Waitara Oval, like a recurring nightmare about Waitara Oval and those friends appealing.
Yeah, it probably tells you a bit about how those two mates of mine used to treat me.
And Waitara in general. Yeah. Nightmare.
I think that is the extent of our throwdowns, Kevin. It doesn't escape our attention that, in Cricket Australia's attempts to kind of deepen engagement, that you've literally allowed 3 random guys from the internet into the boardroom. So thank you very much for your time. Thank you for enduring. We always say thank you for enduring it. Thanks for enduring our attempts at some kind of Denton-style inquisition. But I think you've dealt with it well. And thanks for dealing with the throwdowns as well and for having us in.
Thanks for putting up with me, guys, and great to have 4 old stags in the room. All we need is the stag's head on the wall. That's the only thing missing.
We'll go to the Gordon Club later and have a few. Yeah.
Should we sing the club song now or what?
Only if we're naked.
Yeah, you can sing the club song.
Are you sick of the same old sports drinks? Do you need a plastic bottle rolling around in the front seat of your car for 6 months that also doubles as a urine capsule for those extra long away days? Something that says, I think I'm strong, but I'm actually just chubby. Introducing Alpha Aid. The new number one electrolyte drink from TGC. Alpha Aid helps heal the four emotions you faced after a day in the field. Hope, shame, boredom, and loneliness. Drink it and you'll feel back to your old self in no time. Alpha Aid doubles as the perfect hangover cure too. Nothing makes you temporarily forget all those "hey, you up" texts like sipping on a cool glass of Alpha Aid while sitting in a blackened room trying not to drop your phone on your face. And now introducing Max Alpha Aid, the patented technology that will actually increase your size in the showers. Low on runs? Give yourself the few extra inches in the post-game showers you so desperately crave. It might just be enough to keep your spot in the side. Max Alpha Aid by TGC. For the man who has nothing to hide, but still wants to.
Hashtag AskTGC, and for the first time, hashtag a scapegoat. On Twitter, Nick writes in at Superstick42. He says, "Hi fellas, my girlfriend knows very little about cricket and doesn't really care all that much about it. Yet to my utter surprise, she somehow genuinely enjoyed both your books and the deconstruction of toxic masculinity that lay within."
What?
"Suffice to say that she is grateful I do not play cricket, as am I. This leads me to ask, would you consider your books to be the best or worst way to introduce someone to the world of cricket? Love your work. Keep it up. Cheers." Thank you, Nick. That's a very kind question, I think, although I'm not sure. Who wants to take this one? Best way to introduce someone to cricket, our books?
Depends who you're introducing it to, doesn't it? I mean, if you're introducing like a sociologist to the world of cricket for a dissertation on toxic masculinity, I would say not the worst. Not the worst.
I thought you were going to say How to Hypnotize Chooks by Maxie Walker. Great dissertation on toxic masculinity.
Dino, my call.
Oh, I'm just so happy to hear of females reading our literature. Mm. I mean, our podcast analytics show that we've got about 1% female listenership, but hopefully that's a bit higher for the books.
My favourite people are the people who write in who think that we really enjoy the Alf chops and, you know, the champ jokes as well. And
we fucking hate them. Like, our publisher had a gun to our head.
Wait, we hate it? I thought Alpha stuff is cool.
Remember our book publisher just fucking get those champ gags up there?
Yeah.
And we had to do three edits to the book manuscript and just
more champs.
Get more in there. Just chuck them in. Something's out of context. No,
keep coming with the champ jokes, please.
Nathan writes in and he says, "What's the worst feeling you've experienced in cricket? I can't decide between watching my half-tracker get flat-battered over my head for six to bring up some bloke's 100 or not having my dad turn up to a single game for 9 years."
Ooh.
Worst feeling you've experienced in cricket?
In under-12s, we played against a team called Monash and I wanted to win desperately and to prove my superiority over all those players. And we're playing at Blackman Park in Lane Cove. And I went out to bat and I was on one and I tried to glide a ball down to third man because I'd seen Michael Slater do it in one day cricket, and I like only succeeded in gaining a healthy edge through to the keeper. I was given out and I pretended that I had not hit it and I'd been like greatly wronged. And so as I walked off the field, I hurled my bat.
Oh, yeah.
Like discus style. I didn't swivel, but I hurled it.
Money Slater, like, bad years.
And it, like, flushing, you know, like spun around like a diver and just like skidded along the ground. And then, and then as I was crying, saying I didn't hit it. No, my dad, who was standing there, said in front of everybody, "We all heard it, mate." And I went to, I locked myself in the car for the next long period of time and cried, still alleging that I didn't hit it.
Oh my God.
My friend got in the car and sat with me, which was nice. I'll always remember that. But yeah.
That's very hard to top that. The tears down your face as well.
Yeah, 20 years on, still crying.
I think for me, he goes, and look at yours in a second, was probably under 12 rep cricket grand final. Biggest match of my life to date. I was captain. We're playing at Premier Oval. Always have to mention the Oval. And the night before, we'd actually gone to a black and blue dance party, you might remember because we went to the same school, and it was kind of a organised social where, you know, the affiliated girls' school would go and you'd
we
dance.
We hooked up on you.
I'm surprised you remembered it.
You probably wouldn't call a party black and blue in this domestic violence age anymore either, would
hashtag
you?
No. Well, it was you know, it was Knox soft branding, really.
How's their colours?
Brand awareness and so forth. Yeah, but anyway, I had a big night. I had three cruises.
Nice.
And then the next morning, I fronted up and we batted first, and I got out first ball stumped. Stumped.
Was the keeper back and rolled it onto the stumps?
Yeah. No, I just kind of like moved my foot out of my crease unconsciously,
yeah.
And he whipped the bails off, you know, very, very quickly, and I was on my way to the pavilion, and I was crying.
Yes.
But I kept that to myself. I just went to the cubicle behind Premier Oval and just...
silently cried.
And silently cried. Yeah. Sobbing. The umpire came in and said, "You all right, mate?" And I said, "Please give me 10 more minutes."
Just to continue the theme of under 12s, I think I would have been under maybe 11s or 12s. It's interesting that we've all gone for childhood memories and that somehow we managed as we grew older, we managed to like push our feelings deeper and deeper further down. So that's how men work. Mm. I dropped a catch on purpose.
Okay. Sorry, mate.
I had $50 on that game.
Yeah.
it was in the age where like the retirees, the retired person could come back in after the last wicket. And so the number 11, hit a ball in the air, and their retired batsman was a guy who was like he was going to play for Australia or something. Right. He was 11, but yeah. You know, he was
another next, North Shore product. He was on his way to play for Australia.
He was next cab off the rank, exactly. Mm. Yeah, I think he works on IT now.
Exactly, CBA.
And I dropped the number 11 on purpose because I didn't want to get the professional, semi-professional player back in. Doesn't make any sense. I was playing within the rules, but the scolding I got from my parents, they were like, the other team's thinking about taking him to the judiciary. I was an 11-year-old boy. Anyway, this is probably explains why I think the punishment for Steve Smith, Warner and Bancroft is too harsh because, you know, I'm a cheat.
Did you ever hear about kids going to judiciaries like in juniors?
Yeah.
I always wondered what that setup was like.
The only reference you had was like Sports Tonight footage of like rugby league players going to Phillip Street. Night, so you'd be wearing an oversized suit and you'd be flanked by like your lawyers with briefs and stuff.
It's a live cross back to and Matty Woods
and stuff. Yeah, walking out, giving a press conference.
Yeah. Is it true you double dipped a tea?
Yeah.
All right, Facebook. This is a longer one. Ian Wilson writes in and he says, Hi TGC. When appearing on Q&A this week, former Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull mentioned Rupert Murdoch's comments that Malcolm's got to go and 3 years of Labor wouldn't be that bad. It struck me there are many similarities between the parliamentary leadership coup and the extraordinarily large ban imposed on Steve Smith in the wake of Sandpapergate. Mm. Steve Smith, to me, was the cricket equivalent of small L liberal Malcolm Turnbull, nice guy, rich as fuck considering runs are currency, and a maintainer of conservative values of Australian cricket, aka headbutting the line, sledging the fuck out of everyone.
Mm.
In another sense, however, Smith was posing a threat to staunch right-wing Australian cricket conservatives due to his seriously rare technique, lack of pipes, headbands and sweatbands, French cuts, etc. I guess my question is this. Has Rupert Murdoch infiltrated Cricket Australia more than we suspect? Were the sanctions handed down by CA in an attempt to ensure far-right alpha Australian cricketing culture continues to prosper long-term? Mm. Is Tim Payne's stint as captain just the 3 years of Labor government Rupert Murdoch and CA were willing to endure in order to ensure the public endorsement is the return of an alpha, front dog, win at all costs, get ready for a broken fucking arm captain.
Mm.
Did this all happen because CA and Rupert Murdoch believe Steve Smith was simply too rare to captain Australia? In light of your recent departure from Fox Sports, I hope you can shed some further light on this issue. Cheers, Ian Wilson on Facebook. That's an interesting prose. Mm. Thoughts?
Yeah. Wow. So actually, there were a couple of inquiries to us this week referencing Malcolm Turnbull's appearance on Q&A, and this is only one of them that made it to the
Ask
TGC.
Yeah.
Well, it's good to know that we have kind of a small liberal, as you said, left-leaning cuck listenership. And thanks for writing in.
Soy boys.
Mm. I don't really remember all the questions he asked there because there were so many, but I do agree that Tim Payne is kind of
he's
like...
Labor.
Is Labor. And he's probably going to only last 3 years like Labor would when they get in because that's what Labor governments do these days.
Mm. Spend too much. Well, I do like the parallel between Smith as Turnbull and then I can only presume that like Warner is like Corey Bernardi, Conservative Party styles, you know what I mean? Like just wants to act like
what
Warner is the old school. Warner's the rearview mirror 1950s approach to cricket. Mm. Everything is hard. Mm. Nothing is smart. Mm. Everything is aggressive. Smith is more like of your Turnbull in the sense that like, yes, he does kind of headbutt the line a little bit and give a nod to conservatism, but he's he's not that way naturally inclined, like the way Turnbull is a Republican, you know what I mean? Turnbull wants Australia to become a republic. You know, Steve Smith, by the same token, I think, was interested in kind of being a decent bloke. He's a batting savant, you know. He doesn't want to kind of – he's not a baggy green mythology guy. Payne is Labor. Yeah, I like it. Who's the Greens? George Bailey. I guess.
Well, because he plays for Tasmania.
Yeah, he plays for Tasmania. Yeah, he's left-leaning. Yeah.
Just green.
He might be happy with that.
Their colours are green.
Mm.
I just want to know what Steve Smith's thoughts are on what's happening in Nauru. That's all I want to know. Hashtag escapegoat. G'day, boys. Cobbo here. I'd like to take up your recent offer and regale you with my 2017 escape from cricket. I moved to Austria 18 months ago to study a master's and indulge in the Central European culinary and art scene. I go on day trips to the mountains and I visit a different bar every Saturday with people that I actually like. Mm. I spend most of my time with Australian blokes who speak four languages.
Austrian blokes, though.
Austrian blokes. Sorry,
no, Australian blokes speak four languages.
Speak four languages, have immaculate salads, and I'm amused by my decision to spend the irretrievable Saturdays of my youth averaging 19.83 in a country with the best coastline in the world. In the context of the sepia-tinted paradise my life has become, my question is this: why the fuck did I start shadow batting on my Tinder date last Friday?
The twist at the end.
Good, a little setup.
Cobb, yeah, I don't know your real name. I haven't got it attached to the agenda here, but that's I thought that was a wonderful story, that how much you've bettered your life since leaving cricket.
But it never leaves you, does it? It never leaves you. This is why the under-12 stuff is so true. Again, like, I find myself thinking about cover drives all the time. So often when somebody's talking to me about a topic far more interesting, I'm just thinking...
Glazed eyes. I'm just thinking of that perfect ball outside off stump. Yeah.
Different
19.83, though. Why did he give up cricket? That's good. That's a good average.
It's 20-odd. Thank you so much to Kevin Roberts for joining us on the podcast today. And also thank you to our producer, Toby Shane, Adrian Lung for the music. Like us, rate us on iTunes, leave comments. Like one person who said, it's the only thing I imagine can get me through a Trump world. Don't forget, we will be in all of the major cities during the test matches. Adelaide and Perth are coming up first, then Melbourne and Sydney before we move on to the Sri Lankan leg of the tour. Go on our Facebook page and you can get tickets that way. Also, keep in mind, we'll be in those cities at that time. If you want us to do public speaking gigs, MC, entertainment gigs, you know where we'll be. My name's Ian Higgins, signing off for Sam Perry and Dave Edwards. I don't know who's on next week, but it's going to be good.
But it's going to be good.